John Stewart Christensen. One, two, three, fourth one in line of the family. I'm 69 years old.
Okay. The first question is, what kind of student were you in high school? Were you a jock? Were you a nerd? Were you a straight-A student? Were you a stoner?
Definitely not a straight-A student. I was more a C-plus student, and I was probably would say a jock. I was a four-year or three-year letterman.
What sports did you play?
I wrestled and played football.
And did you wrestle and play? Did you play all 4 years? Or
our high school was only, there was no freshmen, so it was sophomore, junior, senior.
Oh, interesting.
Your middle school was 7, 8, 9. So I played football 7, 8, 9, played baseball 7, 8, 9, wrestled 7, 8, 9, then went to high school and I just did football and wrestling.
Okay. And where'd you go to high school? You went to high school.
Beaverton High School.
Here. Okay. What was the most trouble you got into as a kid?
Oh, boy. There was a number of times I got in trouble. Now, what's a kid?
Let's say under 18.
Ooh. The worst trouble I got, we moved to Beaverton. I think I was in fifth or sixth grade. And one of my friends, Jim York, he had an older brother by 2 years older, I think, or a year older. And I was playing with Jim York.
Mm-hmm.
And his brother kept coming around and bugging us, just teasing us and bugging us. So Jim and I went upstairs to my brother's room, which was, he had his own room over the garage, one of the rooms over the garage. And he had a pump BB gun. So, and it was really weak. It couldn't do anything, really. But Jim and I were up there, and his brother, John, was throwing pine cones at us and stuff. And so I pumped up the BB gun. I aimed at him and shot him right in the armpit. Well, he went home crying.
This is in the house?
He was outside in the yard.
Oh, he was in the yard.
We were on the second floor.
Okay.
Pointed down at him. We got him right here in the armpit. And he ran home crying and told his dad. Jim ran home too. And we get a knock at the dad come home. It must have been a Friday because dad just got home from a trip someplace where he worked. Mr. York came to the door and he was pretty upset. Mr. York was a very prominent lawyer.
Oh,
yeah. I ran and hide. I hid underneath my bed. And dad came upstairs and told me to get out and come, you know, and I've only seen him mad twice like that where he took a belt off.
Mm-hmm.
And mom came up and kept telling, don't hurt him, don't hurt him.
So how old are you at this time?
I was probably, for that one, I was probably 10 years old, maybe 11.
Okay.
So I didn't get a spanking, but he swung that belt at me a few times. I got grounded, of course.
Sure.
And Mr. York went on to be a Supreme Court Justice of Oregon.
Wow.
So,
but you didn't get sued.
Didn't get sued.
You just got a little belt.
Just got a little belt, when Mr. York found out that Jimmy was up there with me and stuff, that it kind of, and what happened, that he calmed down and dad just didn't want to have anything to do. The other time was probably when I took the car out. I was just 16. Took mom, 69. So was I 16 then? Yeah, 17. And took her car out and we went peeling around and a bunch of friends. We were going to pizza parlors and then we'd go to the bowling alley, whatever. And I came into the bowling alley, bowling alley, too fast. And it was wet out. It had been drizzly.
So your parents knew you took the car.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It wasn't like you snuck the car.
No, I had permission to take the car, but when I came into the parking lot, I came in too fast, hit the brakes, and ran into a Mustang.
Oh.
Took out the front corner of it, which the guy was really upset because he just got it out of the paint shop.
Oh, no.
From a previous accident. Oh, he was mad. So when I got home, I parked it in the garage, went upstairs. My mom and dad were in bed. It must have been about 10 o'clock at night. And I told Dad, I had an accident. I hit somebody in the parking lot, and he got up and he came downstairs with his belt. That belt got swung across. I was on one side of the car and he was swinging, and Mom was, "Don't hurt him, don't hurt him." George did the same thing, you know, and all this, you know. And so, again, I got grounded, and I had to pay for the repairs and fix it as much as I could do. And I did that. It was Mom's brand-new station wagon.
Wow.
I don't think she had it a whole year. But that, Merrill did worse.
So, you really? Okay. You have a reputation, at least among the three people that I've interviewed so far, of being the troublemaker of the family. Do you think that's fair?
I probably think that's fair. Okay, I won't say I was the most ignored. And maybe that's what I was doing, getting attention. But, yes, I probably got in more trouble and did more adventurous things than the others.
I was just telling people, it's just so surprising. I've been married to your daughter for 17 years now. I've known you forever. And, like, all these stories that are coming out this weekend, like, I had no idea you're such a fine, upstanding citizen now. I had no idea of your assorted past.
Things change, you know. Having getting married, having kids, going to school, graduating, and all that stuff became more important than the... And plus, after I went into service, I learned a lot about being in the service of discipline, somewhat.
Yeah.
And I think when I got out, I saw all my friends going off in the world and getting married and doing their stuff, and I was 3 years behind. I went in the service.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have any connection with them anymore from high school, really. Not very much connection. And I just kind of quit. My best man was killed in a car accident in Alaska. And that kind of just turned things around and says, you know, I got a job as a teacher. I can't be doing this kind of stuff. I'd be fired in a minute.
Yeah.
So I just straightened up, and I think I shocked my dad.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
You think he was surprised? You think he thought you were going to be trouble?
Oh, yeah. He never thought I'd get... I don't think he ever really thought I'd be about to like, Mark or George.
Yeah.
Or Julie. You know, type thing. And,
did you feel pressure to, like, live up to their... Were you living in their shadow?
Oh, yes. To George's shadow.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So George is what, 5-6 years older than you?
5 and a half, yeah.
Okay, so he was, yeah, I mean, as far as in your formative years, he was probably a pretty big figure, I would imagine.
Only because George did no wrong, and he was a hard worker. He was straight and narrow, and Mom and Dad's favorite.
Okay. Before we get too much far, we talked about the most trouble you got into. What about your kids? Is there one story, or is there... one thing that Amanda or Angela did that stands out is like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they did that.
Neither one of them really got in trouble. They had troubled friends, so we kept a very close eye on that situation. Mm-hmm. They never really, that I know of, they never really snuck out of the house and did things behind our back so much. I don't know. The other night I found out that Amanda, when she was 18, but she was out of the house already when she got a minor in possession. I never knew about that.
Yeah, she's not your responsibility anymore.
Well, yeah, she was 18. Yeah. She was living with her sister. It was Angela's responsibility.
I didn't know that either. That's funny.
You know, that was funny. So, as you know, Angela ran away one time and she got mad at us and she ran away, and I just stayed a long distance away and watched her as she walked through town. And when she was ready to come back, she came back and I knew she was safe. But other than that, no, they weren't big. Amanda was a smoker. I think I found some condoms in her. When, before she moved out, I think I found some condoms in her room. Doing some, maybe it was after she moved out I found them. But when I cleaned the room.
I want to hear the story about... I want to hear your side of the story, because I've heard her side of the story about 400 times, about her, Amanda taking your Jeep and driving it to work and blowing the engine up.
Well, that's probably as much my problem as it was hers. I had a Jeep that I rebuilt an engine. It was brand new engine in it, and she needed a vehicle to get to work, and so I said, take the Jeep, but don't go over 50, 55 miles an hour in it. She was late from work, of course. Amanda, she was late to work. And she must have drove that thing 80 miles an hour down the freeway. And it was just blowing smoke. The people behind her were flashing lights trying to get her attention. Finally, she pulled over after it started clunking. She blew up the engine. And so she called me, and of course, she, I don't know, Dad, something's wrong with the engine. I don't know what's wrong with it. Of course, as soon as I saw it was all, I mean, oil everywhere, and I said, you drove this over 50, 55.
So what was wrong with the engine? You can't drive it over 55.
Well, when you break it in a brand new engine.
Oh, it was brand new
rebuilt engine. You don't take it over until for the first 500 miles you want to baby.
You just let it.
Especially those old engines. Not today's engines, the bearings are much better, but those older engines, you just don't do that, and you got to baby them for the first 500 miles. So this thing had less than 100 miles on it.
Well, you're playing with fire giving that to a 17-year-old girl.
Absolutely.
So, okay.
I'd say it was probably as much my fault, and I can't remember if we had the pickup truck then or why I gave her the Jeep. I mean, that's...
So did... Because I asked Amanda this. Did she get in a lot of trouble for that, or what do you remember doing?
I think she had to pay me a little money.
She told me that she never paid, you know, the whole price for that.
Oh, I'm sure she never did. None of my kids ever paid me back.
She said she felt kind of guilty. I told her it wasn't too late. She could still do it.
But I did. I think I made her pay for something.
Sure, okay.
I don't know if it was like $500 or something. Yeah. She gave me like $50.
What about, I mean, you and Vi were both teachers or in education and around Canby a lot. So at least the story I hear from my wife is that she wasn't able to get away with anything in town because everything she did would just get reported to you because you're a prominent figure in the community. Is that, you think that's accurate?
Fairly accurate. Her mother worked at the grade school that she was in, mm-hmm. both the girls were in. Lisa Angel, I don't know, I can't remember if she was still there with Amanda, but she was a teacher's aide. And so anything Angela did around school or anything else, people would let her mother know. Or, one time, here's a good story, Angela started a sex club in grade school. I think she was in third grade.
I think I have heard this story, yeah.
And so our good friend, the principal, which was Mike Zagaba.
Oh, I know Mike, yeah.
Mike calls Vi into the office and said, we have a problem. Ange was out on recess. She started a sex club. And Vi's mouth just dropped and says, what?
Yeah.
What is a sex club? Well,
yeah, right.
She's going around kissing the boys or something like that.
Uh-huh.
I mean, and she just turned to Mike Zagaba and said, you call John on that. Just passed it off to me, you know. So after school, I had to come over and talk to him. We just laughed, laughed so hard. She probably got grounded for that, or pretty much just probably don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, that's not right. This is why, and so on. And I think that's what she said. She can't get away with anything. Of course, then they all moved from that school. Both of them moved to my school. So anything that happened in school, I knew about it. When she moved to the next school, Amanda did. I moved with her to that school, so she couldn't get away with that.
In sixth grade, she
couldn't get away from me there. So, yeah, and everybody knew Vi and I from church, working in the school, some of the community things that I did. If something went awry, they'd run into me at the grocery store or whatever, they would tell me, oh, was that your cute daughter that I saw walking the streets at 10 o'clock at night, you know? No, better not be. No, yeah, they couldn't get away with a lot.
What was your favorite memory of your parents? Did you guys have, you know, family traditions, or were they particularly affectionate, or do you have fond memories of your parents when you were younger?
Well, I was definitely probably mama's boy. As I was growing up in my teens, if I went on a date or went out and came back that night, I better not be drunk at all. One time I came home drunk, she just sent me right upstairs to bed on a Saturday night, made me get up early in the morning for church. There was no getting out of it. But we would sit up, my mom and I would sit up and talk for an hour, hour and a half. We was talking till about midnight. And I would say I was probably a mama's boy. I didn't get to really know my dad as a person until he was probably retired.
I didn't realize he traveled so much. George was telling me that he traveled basically Monday to Friday, so...
7 months out of the year.
So he was, I mean, a lot of time, Franca was a single mom for a lot of the...
Yes.
Wow.
They had a hard time adjusting when he retired.
Yeah, I bet.
She was in charge during the week, and he'd come home on the weekend. He was an auditor for Chrysler, and his area was Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, Utah, Washington, Oregon, Alaska, and Hawaii. And I think partly, I remember that maybe Northern California.
Yeah, so that would be keeping me busy. So he traveled,
and he had to go to each dealership once every 2 years, I think, or 3 years, and audit their books. So, yeah, he was gone a lot.
So I didn't realize that your grandmother lived with you and only spoke Italian. Did she try and teach you Italian?
The boys never learned Italian. We could understand it, but I don't, and we could speak maybe 50 words at most. The girls picked up the Italian and kind of were taught the Italian from mom or my grandmother. She lived there from the time George was born, I believe. So the first 2 years of their marriage, there was no grandma. But she came to Chicago, I believe, when George was born, or Julie, one or the other. And lived, and she was, what, 60-something years old at that time. And lived the rest of her life to 103 with my dad. Never asked a dime from her.
Hmm.
She got a pension from her husband and her, because they were both teachers in Italy. So she got a pension. She never became an American citizen for that reason, because she, first of all, she didn't learn the American language, and she would have lost her pensions.
Mm.
And so dad never paid, asked her for rent or food or anything. And I think she helped out. She may have bought my mom her first new car. That was the station wagon. And she would give us each, slip us each about $20 to, when we came home from college and turned around and went back. She'd slip us a $20 bill.
Did she, I mean, so she helped raise the kids. I mean, she was prominent. That's why
dad didn't ask her for anything, because she helped raise the kids as a babysitter or whatever. She helped mom clean the house, raise the kids, and things like that.
And so she would talk to you in Italian?
Yes.
Because she didn't know any English.
My name was Mignana Johnny.
All right.
Because I'd always put everything off till tomorrow.
Yeah, right. What was your favorite family vacation as a kid?
Oh, gosh. Well, I'll go back on a little bit on your last question. Okay. You asked about a special holiday. Christmas was the holiday.
Mm-hmm.
That's when everybody came over and got together. George and Sherry would come down, Julie and Al, everybody. As a matter of fact, it was so important to me that I flew in from Germany when I went in the Army.
Oh, yeah.
Just for Christmas.
And you surprised them?
Oh, yeah. I had to do people's 3 weeks of guard duty after that. I got back because I swapped time with them and stuff just to be with them. And I was with them every single Christmas. So I didn't miss any. I was in for 3 years.
So you just like sneak home and then just knock on the door like I'm home for Christmas?
Well, the first time I did, I got in. They didn't tell me that I was coming because I didn't know if I was going to be able to get off. And so I flew in. God, I flew to Amsterdam to New York, changed at New York to Chicago, had to spend, because of some weather conditions, had to spend 6 hours in Chicago USO, and then get bored. And I got in at like 10 o'clock at night in Portland. Got a taxi. A police officer actually helped me get a taxi. Got in a taxi. It cost me $15 to take me to Beaverton. And I showed up at the door around 11:30. They were just breaking up for the party. I mean, they were all, the little ones were in bed. The adults were just sitting back enjoying a cocktail or whatever and talking. And that's probably the only time my dad really drank was there at holidays of Christmas or something. He would have a drink. And I shocked them all. And the next year, I told them I was coming. And so I got there a little early and I stayed a week. So
that's a really cool story, actually.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. And I think the second one I came back, I think, was the time I came back because my fiance broke up with me. And I just needed to be home.
Yeah.
So.
What was your favorite family vacation?
Oh, it'd have to be the one to Canada, to Banff, through Glacier, to Banff.
I don't think I've heard about this story.
To what's the other one up there by Jasper, over to Vancouver and Victoria. We didn't go to Victoria. I think we went to Vancouver and then home again. We rode horses. We stayed in little cottages.
Who went? Normally.
Ann, Mark, myself, Nan, I'm not sure, Nan, Mom. Nana stayed home with Julie, and I think George went with us. I think George was there. George, Merrill, me, Ann, Mark, Mom, and Dad. Nana stayed home, and Julie was home.
Oh, this hasn't come up yet. All right. That and, sounds how long
that,
was it?
That was one of, that was our very, I think that was our first, when we just moved to Beaverton. I think that was our first big vacation. See, after that, we were going to Yellowstone the next year or the year after that, and I had appendicitis.
I did hear this story.
And we got stuck in Wallowa Lake, and they were, all the family was pissed at me because I had appendicitis, and they weren't going to get to go to Yellowstone.
So were you mad that you didn't get to go on the vacation, or were you too?
Oh, I was in the hospital for a week. I was in pain.
So you weren't even thinking about it.
I wasn't even thinking about it. Julie did a lot of the driving with Dad, I think. And, they turned around and came back after I was in there for a week. Of course, there wasn't enough time to go to Yellowstone, so they turned around and went home. And from that time on, I never went on another vacation with my parents.
Because of that, or?
No, I don't think it was because of that.
Okay.
It was just, there was six children. Now, George and Julie grew out of it, and they were on their own. But there was Nana, you know, so there was nine of us. So two people in a seven-car passenger car, two people always had to stay home.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, Dad planned very well. I was in Scouts, so I went to summer camp. Dad packed up the rest of the family and went to Disneyland or down to the coast to the sand dunes. And I always rode it away. Well, I got to go horseback riding, canoeing, rowing, and hiking and doing all this. And they said, well, I got to go to Disneyland and all that stuff. I think they went to Disneyland after I left the house, went to college that year.
Did that? Were you mad about that?
Yeah, Disneyland, you bet.
You mad that they ditched you?
I was kind of mad I didn't go on the dunes with them.
Yeah.
I'm sure they went, in other words, they went to Cape Lookout camping and did some other stuff that I really, but the sand dunes one, they had a great time. I guess Nana just had a wonderful time on the sand dunes riding in those big tracks
and
stuff going up and down. She just laughed the whole time and had a time. And then the Disneyland. I never got to go to Disneyland.
What was your first job after high school?
Oh, after high school. Well, I went to college. Did not do well at college. Came home. And Dad, I was able to get a job at the dealership with Dad's help. He was at Beaverton Dodge. And he had talked to Mr. Notley, and they said, well, have him come over, I'd give him a job. And so I got a job at Beaverton Dodge that year. And that's where I picked up my car, for my first car, for $15.
Oh, wow.
And it blew up 6 months later. So I picked out another car at the car lot that just come in for $300. It was a Triumph TR4 sports car. And I kept that until I went into the service. I went into the service because I did not do well in school. I went to a party one night and at a friend's house. And one of the people at the friend of mine was going in the Navy. He says, I got to go down to the recruiter tomorrow. Do you want to go with me? I'm signing up for the Navy. I said, oh, I'll go with you. He didn't have anybody. His parents weren't going or anything. And so I said, I'll go with you. Well, he was out there talking to his recruiter. He says, I got cornered by the Army recruiter, and he made it sound pretty good. And since I wasn't going back to college, and I really didn't like working at the dealership that much, as a lot lizard, I said, okay, what's the deal here? And he said, well, you sign up now, and you can pick your date you want to go in with up to 6 months. And I said, okay, 6 months will do. And so I went in January 1st, 1973.
And it sounds like the service was good for you.
I think it was.
You think it helped you turn things around a little bit?
Yeah, I was given a lot of responsibility. And, of course, I got in some trouble, too. But, overall, yeah, it was a pretty positive experience of living on my own, living with people and stuff.
Yeah. So you had five brothers and sisters, or six of you. Did that make you want to have a big family? I mean, clearly you only had two daughters. So was there part of you that wanted to have a big family? Or
no.
Because you had so many brothers and sisters?
No.
You just decided.
Financially, it was ridiculous to have more.
Right.
I mean, I could barely, you know, what the teacher made and when Vi wasn't working. She quit as soon as Angela was born, and she had to go back to work. She cried all the way to work and all the way back home. So she had to quit her job, and we just, Julie helped us get into our house. She was our realtor. And I was strapped for every dime getting in that house. I mean, back then it was $72,000. And that was $20,000-$30,000 more than what we really could afford.
Mm-hmm.
But we finagled it. We got a $10,000 loan from my grandmother. And I had to pay that back with 3% interest and in 10 years. So we were really strapped. And so, no, I didn't want any more. Matter of fact, Angela was kind of a surprise. Don't tell her that, but she was kind of a surprise.
Well, it's on the record now.
Okay, well, we were kind of waiting a little bit longer because her mom just quit her job.
Yeah.
And we really didn't have a job, and so she got a job with babysitting kids.
Oh.
When Angela was born. And matter of fact, the first year, I think Angela was, she was with Betty Crawford was babysitting her mm-hmm. when she was going to work. Well, she couldn't deal with driving to Tigard anymore. It just was killing her.
Be careful tapping the table. The microphone will pick it up real good.
It was terrible. I mean, she was in tears. She had postpartum, you know, and everything.
Yeah.
And so I said, okay, you got to do something. We can't afford this house, or we're going to lose the house and everything. I said, you got to do something. So she said, well, I'll start up a daycare. There's a lot of teachers that need child care. So we did that for a year or so. But then she was able to work her way into the an opening in grade school. I think Angela was about 3 then. And I think Betty watched her until Vi got off, and then Vi went and picked her up and stuff. But, it was, we were strapped and we wanted more than one.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got 2 girls, and Vi said, do you want to have a boy? Do you want to try for a boy? And I said, George had boys and girls. Meryl had all boys. Julie had all girls. I'm doomed for all girls, so I will. No, let's just stop at 2.
That's what Angie and I said. We had 2 boys, and I said, really want to have a girl, but I'm going to end up. If we have a third one, I'm going to get 3 boys. And
I'll get 3 girls.
And then I'm going to get triple screwed, so we're just going to cut our losses.
That's pretty much what we did, too. We just said we're going to cut our losses here, and love them both dearly. But that was, it was more of economics than anything else. It was
I think that's pretty reasonable.
That's today.
Who would you say is your parents' favorite child?
George.
No question.
No question.
Not Mark, no hesitation.
No, no. And I prove it. Mark and I took care of Mom for mm-hmm. 10 years.
Yep.
And every time those 10 years came, even down to the very end, we said, George is coming to see you. She would do almost a get off of the table and do a dance. Her smile was so big. When's he coming? When's he coming? Who's coming with him? And as we're taking care of her, I don't like this food. I don't want that. George is coming. Oh, really? Okay. You could tell. George was the favorite.
Well, for what it's worth, I've interviewed 4 of the siblings, and George is the immediate answer on all 4 of them. No question, no hesitation. All right.
Yep.
Where did you meet your significant other? And that can be 2 parts since you've been remarried. So where'd you meet Vi?
Okay, we met Vi. My best man had a date set up with his girlfriend. They were going to meet at a tavern in Southeast Portland. And said, why don't you come along? She says she's going to bring a friend of hers. I said, okay. And so I went with her, and I met Vi. We just played pool, had a few beers, and we said
goodbye. So you met her at a bar?
Yeah, met her at a bar.
Mm-hmm.
Tavern, more than a bar.
Right.
I think we actually went to their apartment, which was down the road about 3 or 4 or 5 miles, down the road, and this was in the end of November. And so we went there to their place and had another drink or so. And so we had to leave. Pete and I had to leave. And she says, I think it was Vi said, yeah, she was having a party, a Christmas party. And so we said, okay. They asked us to come over for the Christmas party. That was the second day. There was a day before that, I think, probably. But yeah, it was at a tavern. It was just to play pool. It was kind of a...
So a friend introduced
date,
you.
Kind of a, yeah. A friend introduced me to his girlfriend's friend. So that's how we met.
Was it love at first sight?
Probably not. Not until we got to know each other.
Yeah, okay.
I'd already been through it once. She'd already been married.
Mm-hmm.
Her marriage only lasted 6 months. And he was kind of abusive. So she ended the marriage. And I had already been through, in the Army, I'd already been through a fiancé.
You were engaged for several years, right?
For every year.
At least.
1 year.
So you were a little gun-shy.
A little bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I wouldn't say it was love at first sight, but once I got to know her, she was funny. She worked at the same school. We worked at the same school together. She was working at the veterans office and going to school, and I was going to school at Portland Community College. So we got to see each other there.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we started dating from that after seeing each other. And I'd go in and she'd do my paperwork for school and stuff for the veterans. So my school was paid through the veterans.
And how long were you guys married before she died?
36 years.
36 years. Wow. And then...
We'd be celebrating... What would your 50th would be? 2029 would be our 50th.
Wow. So, what was that like? I mean, so your spouse has died. Is it hard to decide to date again? Were you chomping at the bit because you didn't want to be alone? Was it a hard decision to make?
It was a hard decision to make. I didn't want to be alone. I was already alone with Vi the last 5 years, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. She was very dependent on you, for sure.
Very dependent. She was, so she went in her little room and stayed in her little room all day long.
Mm-hmm.
And then went to bed, and that was it. We never hardly saw each other for the last 5 years.
Yeah. It seemed to me, and I don't want to be presumptuous, but she was kind of demanding on you, too.
Oh, yeah.
She was very dependent on you, and I kind of felt like sometimes she didn't have patience for you not getting the things done that
fast
she needed.
Fast enough, or she was, and she was hurting, and I knew that.
She had major chronic pain, right? And
from the neck down, she had major chronic pain.
And she was taking a lot of pills. And
17, 18 pills a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was incredible. I knew the last 10 years, I think I knew every magazine and every doctor's office around.
Yeah, you were doing a lot of driving, I do remember that.
So, you know, but, you know, you're in it for better or worse.
Yeah, absolutely. It's part of the vows, right? Mm-hmm. So where did you meet Lynn then? And how long after was that?
With Lynn, it wasn't that long after, actually. I died in July of 13. And it was February. I think it was around the first part of February. Amanda came to me and said, Dad, you should get online. I'll help you set it up. So she helped me set up a website for, I think it was called It's Your Time.
Okay.
So I got on there. Oh, God, you set up, you get on there and you just get inundated in a box full of people. And first you fill out the form. And because I'd been through marriage and everything before, I just said, okay, we're going to just write this down. I'm retired. I want someone who is retired. I want someone who is not divorced, who is a widower, like myself.
So the being a widower was a prerequisite?
Yes. Yep. It was. But you don't get all those things with all the people they said. So right. I must have gone through hundreds of profiles. And 60, 70, 80% of them were all divorced.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they had to be working, making their own money or had their own income. And I didn't put a specific amount for their income, but they had to have their own support of supporting themselves. And with no welfare or anything. I mean, they had to be supporting themselves. So money was the issue. I wanted that. I wanted independent, you know, financial independence. I wanted, and I wanted, didn't want a divorcee because I didn't want to have to deal with exes.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't care if they had children, but they couldn't be living with them. And so I was, I got literally hundreds of profiles, 20, 30 a day. And I'd go through them and say, nope. I'd call a couple of them and ask them a few questions. Nope. Sorry. And her face came up, and the smile on her face told me that she was an honest, kind person, just from her smile. And so I said, okay, this is my first one after hundreds. I said, this will be the first one I'm going to ask on a date. So I called her up. We talked for just a few minutes. I said, would you like to meet for coffee in the morning? I think it was a Friday morning at a coffee shop in Oregon City. Can't tell you the name of it. We drive by it all the time, right across from the courthouse. I figured a police station would be pretty good. You know, around police would be a good idea.
Just in case.
Just in case. So we did that, and we just got talking and talking. We talked in that coffee shop probably for an hour and a half, 2 hours. And so I think we met at 10. It was noon now, and I said, are you hungry? She said, no, I can probably eat. I said, well, let's walk down. The Verdict has some good food. So
yeah.
Let's go down to the Verdict and have lunch. So we did. And from there, we made a date for Saturday. I said, you know, I was thinking about going up the gorge to Hood River to watch the wind sails.
Windsurfing.
And would you like to go take a drive and go up there? And she said, okay. And so that was our first official date, was going up to Hood River. I think I had a beer, and she had iced tea or something, and we came home. We watched the windsurfing for a couple hours and talked to all the people down there, and you could just tell she was inquisitive with people. He almost had to hold her back. I mean, she was running around talking to people and stuff.
Oh.
And so, I mean, she was very open. You could just tell that she was open to people and not judgmental, you know, and had a great sense of humor and stuff, and so, you know. I asked her out on a second date. I don't even remember where we went on the second date. Probably out to dinner someplace. Funny thing is, I think when she first came over to my house, she said she checked out the freezer to make sure it wasn't big enough for her body. That's what she says. I don't know if she did or not.
Yeah.
That's what she tells everybody. She says, yeah, I figured if I can't fit in the freezer, then he's probably safe.
There you go. So we talked about it a little bit already. The next question is, what was your college experience like? So it sounds like college didn't work out for you, so you joined the service.
I was a partier. Well, first of all, I don't know where my parents were on this. I got out of high school. I went to work that summer, and I worked that summer. I was 18. I might have come up with George up at that time, that year. Come up to Bellingham and worked at a dairy for a week. And I said, no way anymore. I mean, I was up from 5 o'clock in the morning till, you know, I worked until 5 to 5. And I said, and George wasn't around. He'd come home from work from the refinery and get in his car, get washed up, get in his car, and go take off to the bar with his buddies and left me there by myself. So after a week, I just said, that's it, and I quit. He gave me a bus ticket home, and I took the Greyhound bus home. And then I got a job at Safeway, and I was working at that time. See, I had a little motorcycle. I was riding a 125 Suzuki that I bought, brand new. And I went to, drove it to Woodburn every day from Beaverton. I worked at Safeway in Newburgh. That was a long ways. You know, it was 20 miles. And back for the summer. And then I just went to college. I had no instruction what to do in college.
Were you not a good student?
They told me to, first of all, remember, I had a C-plus average.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't very good at studying in the first place. I went to the fraternity house. That's where I was staying. Same one George was president at. Later, Mark became president. So a bunch of the guys there knew George from years ago. And my fraternity big brother knew George very well. And he says, yeah, you just go down to the auditorium and sign up, get in line, and then sign up for your classes, and you're good to go. I didn't know what classes to take. I didn't know. I should have been with an advisor going through all that. I never went through any of that stuff. So I was taking classes I had no business taking whatsoever, and I didn't have any English classes, which I was supposed to have. And it was all screwed up. So I hated the classes I was in. Didn't know how to study, and I partied. There was another guy in the house, and we would drink and party until one time the rest of the house brothers got really mad at both of us, because it was dead week, I think. We were all supposed to be studying for tests and stuff. And to ask Meryl, I didn't go to half my classes. She was in some of my classes, never showed up. So I just partied in college, and I end up with a 1.1 the first term. Next term, my big brother came over and sat me down and tried to teach me how to study, and I got a 2.3. And the next term, he wasn't around, so I got a 1.6. And when you add them all together, I wasn't a C average, so I was pretty much got my letter that said, you don't qualify to come back to school. So now I had to do something. Either I was going to work or go in the service. And Dad and Mom had gone to Hawaii. Dad had to work over there. Mom went with him for a week, I think. And when they got home, I said, look, Dad, I joined the Army. He kind of shook his head at first and said, you know, I think it's going to be good for you. Because when my grades came home, Dad never got mad. I was surprised. He really didn't get mad at me. He says, well, I guess we're just going to chalk this year up as a learning experience. And then when I told him I was in the service, I think that will do you good. Mom was not real happy about it, but Vietnam War was still going on.
Mm-hmm.
So that scared her a little bit. I said, look at Mom, I signed up. I'm not going in until January 1st, 73. And I signed up for Europe. I'm not going to Vietnam. You don't know that, she said. They can send you anywhere you want. And I said, well, I'll take that chance. But that's what I signed up for. So I did end up in Europe for 3 years.
And you think it was good for you?
I do.
Better than college?
I do. You know, as everybody hates the Army, you know, you go in there and pretty much hate it unless you're going to become a lifer. It's boring. It's disciplined, but it's very boring. Same job over and over again, and then they put you through training that is, you know, is absolutely ridiculous. If you have any brains, you kind of buck the system a little bit, tell them how stupid it is, and they don't like that. So, yeah, after 2 years, I was pretty much done with it. That's when I started getting in more trouble. And finally, I got out, and I got out with an honorable discharge.
Do you want to talk about that?
There's not really much to talk about is that back then,
your siblings were very worried.
Yeah, I don't know why they were so worried. Back then in Germany, they have to understand in the Army, there was no pot smoking. You know, I saw a lot of heavy drugs, a lot of heroin. We had a lot of heroin. And we had a lot of guys OD from heroin. Many died from heroin. But everybody was doing some kind of stimulus. And back then, you didn't have marijuana, so the easiest thing to get back then was hashish. And you bought it in little chunks, like an ice cube almost.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't very expensive. I mean, that was like $15. I mean, and that would last you a week. Well, sometimes smoked it faster than that. And you put it in a little pipe, and you smoke a little bit of it, and then it would just numb you, and you'd have a couple beers, and that'd be your night. And someone ratted on us that we were living off base, because we snuck off base and got an apartment. off base. We hated living in the barracks. I bought a car. We went off base, and we traded our rations of cigarettes and alcohol. We traded that for our rent. Because a bottle of whiskey cost us, a good whiskey, bourbon, would cost us $3. And on the German market, they were getting $50, $60 back then for it. And a package of American cigarettes, where we were getting them for 50 cents a pack, they, oh, was it even that much? I'm not sure, that $2 a carton, 20 cents a pack. They were, we could sell them on the German market for $5 a pack. So we traded our landlord three bottles of whiskey and three cartons of cigarettes for our rent. Mm. For a little teeny apartment, which was probably smaller than this. Mm. And we lived in that for about 6 months when somebody squealed on us that we were living off base and said that we were using drugs. So one day when driving through the barrack, coming into the barracks in the morning, they pulled us over, and they checked the car, and they didn't find anything. We didn't have anything. And that night, I guess, I didn't even know this, that night the colonel called my parents and said that we think your son is transporting drugs, and which I have no idea where he got that from. And so we got called into, my dad calls me, and he's kind of yelling at me, what the hell's going on, blah, 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 blah. I said, Dad, I have no idea what you're talking about. We got called into the captain's office, and he was pissed because somebody went over his, you know, you, in the Army, one of the worst things you do is go over the chain of command.
Yeah.
And he was mad that somebody went to his boss instead of coming to him first. And so he said, don't be doing it anymore. Don't be doing anything. You're grounded to the base. Get rid of that apartment. You're staying on the base. That's it. And we said, okay. We got rid of the apartment and came into the base and straight as arrows other than drinking.
That's it. The rest is history.
The rest is history.
Okay.
You know, that was it.
Was that the moment? Was that part of the moment that you think you'd set yourself straight? Like, maybe I crossed the line?
Probably.
Yeah. And probably. How old were you at this time?
22.
I mean, that's a good age for a wake-up call.
22. It was kind of a wake-up call.
Okay.
But the last thing I wanted was to get any kind of bad discharge.
Yeah.
I knew that a dishonorable discharge was going to just mark me,
yes,
tattoo me for life.
Yeah, right.
So, no, that was it. We came on base. We drank, which was allowed.
Yeah.
We drank, and that was it. We didn't do anything else to do, you know, and that was it. So I didn't have to give up the car. All we had to do was stay on base and keep our nose clean. No article. They didn't give us an Article 13. They had no proof on anything. So they couldn't even get us on anything. There was absolutely no.
So as far as you're concerned, it was completely fabricated. You were never doing anything.
No. We were doing a little bit of this and that, but nothing big. You know, some of the guys I was with, they buy, your cell phone is the size of a brick.
Okay.
Okay, there was four of us. So you cut out your 1-inch by 1-inch portions each.
Of hashish.
Of hashish.
Okay.
The whole brick would cost us $100. We cut out our portion of four pieces. We sell the rest of it, cut it up into pieces, and sell them for $30 a piece.
To other people in the service?
To other people in the service that wanted it.
Oh.
And that would pay for ours.
You're quite the entrepreneur.
And that was it. That's all it was. We didn't make any money on them. We just paid for ours. That was it. And we only did that, I think, one time. One time did we do that. And that was it. And it was more the other guys. I wasn't even involved in it, other than they, you know, it was my car we went back and forth to the apartment with.
So, I mean, sounds like you dodged a bullet, because it could have been way worse.
It could have been way worse.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there was probably at times that there was some in my car with them And we tried never to do that, put it in the car with us, because we knew that we had to go through the gate every day.
Yeah.
And there was probably times that we did, because we bought it on base. Someone had it on base. We bought it there, took it back to our apartment, cut it up, and then sold it on base and stuff. So, or they sold it. I didn't sell it. I got my parts, and I was done.
What was the worst thing you ever did to one of your siblings? Or did you ever pull any pranks on them? Or did you pay? I'll let you answer that first, then I'll.
I took Meryl's bike. She got really mad. She had fallen and broken her arm. And I, in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
So I took her bike and rode to the neighbors down the way, around the way, Firebox probably.
Mm-hmm.
And she got really mad and started pounding the window and broke the window with her cast.
Oh, wow.
And that was the biggest prank I probably pulled on her. I can't think of any other pranks I pulled on. So what did they say? I want to know what they said.
You want to set the record straight?
I want to set the record straight. If they say anything.
Do you think you picked on Meryl?
Well, that was the only time I picked on Meryl was that one time. I don't think I picked on Meryl. George picked on Meryl.
You didn't set out to make Meryl cry?
No.
No?
No. Meryl and I are the sensitive ones.
Yeah.
And
did George pick on Meryl?
Oh, relentlessly.
Yeah.
I think so.
Okay. Did your siblings ever do anything terrible to you? Steal your car or rat on you or anything?
No. Joey locked me out of the house one time and I put my foot through the window and have a scar in the back of my heel from it. She doesn't even remember that. But I do. It was the living room window door going out to the porch, screen porch. And I did was that in Ohio? Or, I got to think if that was in Ohio, it was the first year we were in Beaverton. I think it was in Ohio. And I cut the back of my heel with the glass. Other than that, well, they didn't really pick on me. You know, I got picked on because I looked like Howdy Doody as a youngster, and my mother dressed me like that. Like, how do you thinking that was what you do in America?
Oh, it was a cultural thing? Like, she didn't understand the culture?
Yeah, well, she said, well, you see it on television. Well, you know, the kids from today running around like superheroes?
Yeah, yeah.
She dressed me up in a red checkered shirt with a handkerchief around my neck, and I had big ears and red hair. Hey, that was Howdy Doody. So I got name called through school for Howdy Doody. So, but my siblings?
What about, I was given three stories to ask you about.
Okay.
One was the BB gun story, which sounds like we already went over.
Yep.
Another one was, did you chop down or you did something to the bark on the tree in your dad's backyard, and he had to fell the tree and it cost him $300?
No.
No?
No, I don't remember that at all.
That doesn't ring a bell to you? Okay.
I remember hiding a hammer. Dad was looking for his hammer, and I had taken it. And had taken it to a friend's house. We were doing some building something, and I forgot to bring it home.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't supposed to borrow Dad's tools. So he lined us all up in the front yard and asked us, who took my hammer? No one fessed up. So after it was all over with, I take off to my buddy's house, and I grab the hammer, and I sneak back, and I bury it in the garden.
Oh, wow.
And then a few days later, or whatever, a week later, Dad, look what I found.
Oh, you dug it up and acted like you found it?
Yeah, like I found it, you know. And it didn't work. Didn't go very well. Dad knew. He never punished me for it, but he knew that. He was just happy to have his rusty hammer back now.
Yeah, right. Sit in the ground for 7 days.
Wet ground, you know, for 7 days.
I don't have any background on this, but someone told me to ask you about your behavior in church. Were you notoriously...
George was supposed to be in charge of me when I was a little boy, I guess. We would go to church, and I'd be like whack-a-mole. I'd be gone, and I'd be crawling underneath the... And I was probably three, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Two or three. So I'd be crawling on the pews, and I'd pop up. My head would pop out here. I'd be done. Pop up here. And Mom would see me there. George! He'd get in trouble because he was supposed to be taking care
of me. So you just wouldn't sit still.
Right. Oh, no.
But, I mean, you're three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was crawling underneath the things, yeah. At least that's the story they tell me. I don't remember that, but George tells me that all the time.
tell me about the last thing I have is tell me about this letter that you and Mark wrote, or the Christmas letter that you wrote on behalf of Franca and mailed to your siblings.
God, I don't remember that. What was that?
You don't remember writing a letter saying that, as Franca, saying that John and Mark are my favorite kids and they do so much for me and I wish all my other kids could be like them?
I think we did do that. I think Mark was the one behind that, not me. But I think, I'm pretty sure I put my name to it. I don't really remember that, but now you say it, I kind of remember something about that. That there was a point when Mark and I were taking care of Mom, and Mom was getting pretty bad. And it wasn't because of her fault. I think they were over-medicating her.
You're right.
And causing this. Like I said, whenever we mentioned George, oh, she would just perk way up and just do a dance. And so I think we did put together a letter and sent it to everybody as a joke to say that...
just you were trying to get some credit for all the hard work you were putting in.
I don't think we were trying to get credit. We're just telling, oh, Mark and John take good care of me. They're my favorite, you know, and stuff like this.
Mark said he printed it out on his computer, but he actually got her to sign it, so it's in...
Probably.
Oh, wow.
He probably did. Okay. I'm sure I just got pulled along in it and stuff.
Okay.
George got a kick out of it. No, you're not. I am. You know it.
That's all I have. Is there any question I didn't ask you or any story you want to tell that you think is worth... We cover everything?
I think we covered everything. I'm not that bad a person as they think I am.
No one said you're a bad person. The only thing that came up was that you were a troublemaker as a kid, and I thought that was surprising just because I know you now.
Well, I probably was very much a troublemaker. I had a lot of stories. But you talked to Nan, and her brother and I got... We have stories from... Oh, God. I mean, I started smoking, drying corn silk in my dad's office. He had a desk downstairs in the basement. He never came downstairs. So the desk drawer, the top drawer, all this corn silk laid out drying. Then we'd chop it up. Now, we're talking, I'm 7, 8 years old.
Oh, wow.
And then rolling it up in paper,
mm-hmm.
and smoking.
Pretending to smoke.
Now, Mom smoked.
Right.
Dad smoked cigars. Mom smoked Salem.
Everybody smoked back then.
And so we were going to be cool, and we were smoking this. I think it was the Farbach boys and myself, not Andy. Andy and I got in trouble for... Andy started a fire behind their house in the field, and they had to call the fire department and put it out. I got blamed for that one, too, because I don't know why I got blamed, because Andy's the one who did it. And then the big story my mom loved telling is about how all the neighborhood kids... We were about 8 years, 7 or 8 years old. We went up the hill and over. There was a farmer, and he was growing cabbages. And he went out with his laborers and stuff and put these big, huge rubber bands around the cabbages to keep the bugs out and stuff. All his kids rode our bikes up there, got off, went out in this field and started taking all these rubber bands because we wanted, they were cool. We'd shoot guns and everything, mm-hmm. made good guns and everything. And he yelled at from the barn. He saw us out there, and he yelled, "Stop!" And everybody took off running. Well, my hood came off. I'm the only redheaded kid within 30 miles.
So you were sold out.
Oh, God.
By your hair.
So he came to my mother and told her, and Mom made me go up there and apologize and put back all the rubber bands. Give back all the rubber bands. And he said, you know, it's going to be a lot of labor for me to go back and put all these on. And he said, I'm sorry, you know, and everything. And he said, all you boys had to do is come ask me. I would have given you a ton of them. But don't take them off my cabbages.
Right. It's more about the work than it is the rubber band.
Right. I mean, we were mischievous. I mean, we had no parental guidance. My mother had children to raise. So we were out running with the other kids like a gang. The field, the cornfield, the farmer's field would flood. And Andy and I think it was Andy and I, were in a old Pepsi cooler, you know, the one you lift up and get the Pepsi out of, you know. We were sitting in that with a big long stick pushing ourselves through the flood waters, dead cows floating and stuff and all this crap from the flood. We're out there, we're 7, 8 years old.
Yeah. It was a different time, man.
It was a different time. I mean, we went on the lake when it got to be sick. George would check to see, and the older boys would check to see if it was 6 inches thick, then we could all go on the river. We'd be walking around and playing hockey on the river with 6 inches of, you know, it would freeze over for 6 inches.
Mm.
Ellen Farbach and I, we got in a rowboat. It was a yacht club behind us. And there was somebody had tied up a rowboat at the dock, and it was an L-shaped dock. So we got Ellen and I, we were five or six, we're on the river, running on the dock, getting into the boat, untying it, pushing it from the dock to the shore, and then back until we missed the dock, and we were out in the middle of the river, floating down the river. People eating lunch at the yacht club see us, these two little kids, in a rowboat, floating down the river. They had to come get us. Oh, my God. You know, we did crazy, stupid, but we had no parents watching us. We were allowed to do these things. You know, that's why they had so many children. If they lose one, hey, they got more.
Get a couple spares,
there's
right?
A couple spares.
Well, it's been an hour.
Okay.
I mean, almost. Is the last question I've been asking everybody, is there someone here who has an interesting story that I should ask them about? That's where I came up with those other ones that those people gave me.
I'm sure they had lots of me. My name probably came up a lot.
I'm curious if there's a story you think we should get out of somebody else that we may have already not gotten.
I still don't really understand the story of George wrecking Dad's company car.
Oh, I haven't heard that.
I believe it was a Super B, maybe an RT. George took it out. I don't think it was a date. Dad let him go. Favorite child. Dad never let us drive his cars unless we were going to the car wash and back. George got to take it out at night. And he ran it off the road, and the police called Dad. Dad drove up there to where he had taken it off the road.
Did he wreck the car or just drove it into the ditch?
I think he just drove it into the ditch. Couldn't get out. And he said, well, he's going to have to figure, told the police officer, I guess he's going to have to figure it out. Then he went back home. I don't even think he got in trouble, other than, you can't drive my cars anymore. I put a little dent in the car, and I got a belt flying at me.
Oh, I see.
You know, and George, favorite. Every time. Right. George is the favorite.
All right, well, we'll go ask him.
Yeah, I think that's the story, but I'm not sure how he got off the road.
Okay. Well, thanks for sitting down and setting the record straight. If something else, if you think of, you know, another interesting story between here and there, we'll let me know. We can always add an addendum, but I appreciate you
putting up with my questions. Oh, I'm sure their stories about me are better than mine are about them.
Well, when this is all done, you can listen to all of them, and then we'll have a period of rebuttal. Thanks, John.
Okay.